Jenny White is a professor of anthropology and director of undergraduate studies at Boston University. Her research focuses on Turkish politics, with interests including political Islam, civil society, and ethnic identity. Her most recent book, Muslim Nationalists and the New Turks, which I'll circulate while we're talking, examines how contemporary Turkish nationalism and Islam intersect to produce a new conception of Turkish national identity. She's also the author of Islamic Mobilization in Turkey, A Study in Vernacular Politics, and Money Makes Us Relatives, Women's Labor in Urban Turkey, as well as three critically acclaimed historical novels set in 19th century Istanbul, the Kemal Pasha series. She's a former president of Turkish Studies Association and has received many grants and fellowships, including from the SSRC, MacArthur, and the National Science Foundation. Her BA is from the City University of New York, an MA from Hacettepe University in Ankara, and a PhD in anthropology from UT Austin. It's such a pleasure to have you up here at the Boazi Center, Jenner, and please join me in welcoming her.
I saw in the Turkish news this morning that they have a new television series. It's a detective series set in the late 19th century. And I'm like, can it be? No, it wasn't. It wasn't mine. So this is quite a challenge to talk in 15 minutes.
Or 20.
So what I thought I would do is, and I don't actually know how much background most of you have on Turkey, so I don't want to leave anything to chance. And so what I thought I would do is I would just give a brief sketch of the performance of the AKP, the Justice and Development Party, which is now in power, from the time it was first elected in 2002 to the present, because it has all these twists and turns which I think are relevant to trying to understand what's going on now. Then there's also obviously a lot that can be said about social transformations that were going on at the same time, regional issues, and so on. But we can talk about that later. This, if I thought of doing it this way, because that would give you a kind of scaffolding to put the discussion, to hang the discussion on of these other things. So the AKP was elected in 2002. It had its roots in prior Islamist parties, that is, openly Islamist parties, parties that made policy through an Islamic lens. And when the AKP came to power, it claimed not to be Islamist anymore. In fact, I brought my book, The Islamist Mobilization in Turkey, which had interviews with many of the people who then later on became the founders of AKP. And I brought them the copy of the book when it came out right after they were elected. And they said, oh, thank you so much, but you know we're not Islamists anymore. It's like, what are you now? So actually that led to my next research project, which is what are they now? And they had this very clear understanding of what they at the time called Muslimhood. That is, we're not Islamists. We are people who are pious Muslims, who bring our piety and our values with us when we go in, you know, into our jobs. You know, if we're prime minister, why should we leave our you know religion at the door? But we don't make policy on that basis. We make policy on the basis of other pragmatic considerations. So that was their, they had a whole theology of secularism, actually, that involved the Ankara School of Divinity and so on. So people don't use this term anymore, Muslimhood, but the description of it comes up when they try to talk about what world religion plays in governance. Now, it's become, when we get up to the present, we'll see that there are some things that can be said about that, you know, or some challenges that can be put to this notion. But let's put that off for now. So this was very exciting to a lot of people, because previously you had something called laicism, which, contrary to its usual translation as secularism, is not secularism. It's state control of religion, very, very top-down, intrusive state control of religion in the public sphere, in the schools, and so on. And so this notion that you could have the state and the government has some distance from religion was welcome to a lot of people, including secularists and liberals. So initially, when the AKP came to power, it was like a big tent. Lots of people voted for it. Some out of, you know, because they were doing good economic things, some because they liked this distance from religion, because of some of their other reforms that they instituted. So, for instance, they revived the EU accession process. And as part of that, they implemented or started to implement a number of requirements for aligning Turkish state institutions and laws to Europe's. And that made a huge difference. I mean, it transformed, to a large extent, Turkish institutions. So there was a lot of progress in that regard. They had a global outlook, right? So there was globalization economically. The prime minister, Tayyip Erdogan, would fly in planes that, you know, whenever he went visited another country, there'd be like 300 to 500 businessmen in the plane behind him, and they'd get out and make deals while he's there. So this was a global economic outlook. Obviously, Erdogan was building on the previous regime's opening of the economy to the world market under Turgut Özal, who was prime minister and then president, who really should get the credit for a lot of this. But they built on this, and they managed to stabilize the Turkish economy and grow it in a way that people hadn't seen for a long time. And so people really value this stability. The other thing that happened during the 1980s with this opening of the economy, sort of pre-AKP, is that once the economy was open to the world market, previously social groups that had previously not been able to expand economically because they weren't, you know, among the favored by the state who could get subsidies, they tended to be provincial business people, small businesses in the provinces. They also tended to be rather pious. Those people suddenly had opportunities to make a lot of money and to become, you know, to put that money into politics and become politically powerful. So after the 1980s, I would say as a result, a large part of this economic transformation, an entire new part of the population rose socially and politically. And the press called them, you know, the Islamic Calvinists, the Anatolian Tigers, and so on. And they put their money into parties like the AKP. They also were followers, many of them. There was an overlap, okay? They weren't the same. But they were also followers of the of Fethullah Gulen, the Hizmet movement. So many people who voted for the AKP were also his followers of Hizmet, but they weren't the same groups of people necessarily, which is important later on when they come to blows more recently. So the economy was a big turning point, and this new part of the population not only became wealthy, they developed a whole new industry or industries around being Muslim. So suddenly you had an Islamic bourgeoisie that could, and all kinds of commodities that were designed for them, you know, Muslim leisure activities, Muslim haute couture, Muslim publishing industry. It's in every realm where you had a secular version, you also started to have a Muslim version, and they looked very much alike. You had Muslim gated communities and you had secular gated communities. Turkey has long been polarized, and people even in Turkey talk about the polarization as being between Islamists and secularists. And I don't buy that. I mean, that's an easy way to demonize the other group, but it doesn't reflect what's on the ground, where those groups actually appear very, very similar to one another, especially the younger people. People under 30 make up half the population. They grew up under this new economy. they grew up, with the ability to go out there and choose in the market how they're going to be a Muslim, you know, so that's one aspect of this. The other aspect also has to do with choice, because not only has being Muslim been totally transformed by this, but also being Turkish has been totally transformed by this. The Kemalist national paradigm was that the nation begins in 1923. They kind of completely overlooked the Ottoman Empire, which was the kind of corrupt entity from which they emerged. So the nation began in 1923, embattled by all of these foreign powers trying to undermine them. And this picture, which some scholars call the Sèvres syndrome, named after the Treaty of Sèvres, which severed Turkey, remained the sort of model for the Turkish nation and what was being taught in schools. That is, everyone's out to get us. You know, that you have outside enemies, you have inside enemies who are tended under Kemalism to be the people, the non-Muslim part of the population, non-Muslim Turkish citizens, because since they weren't Muslim, they couldn't possibly be loyal to Turkey, and they were obviously being cat's paws for outside powers trying to undermine Turkey. And so this whole rhetoric of threat, of outside and inside enemies trying to undermine Turkey, that you need a strong state and a strong military to protect you, much like in the traditional family, you need a pater familias for the citizen children to protect them. This was the rhetoric that children grew up with. There was no rhetoric about citizenship, what the state can do for you. It was always what you can do for the state, other than being protected from these people. Lots of conspiracy theories, which, you know, an awful lot of people who you wouldn't expect believed, because that's how they grew up. That's all they knew. There wasn't really an opening to the outside where they could have other forms of information. There wasn't even a lot of travel abroad. It was very hard for Turks to travel abroad for a long time. So getting back to the AKP, it goes back a little further than the AKP into the Islamist parties, but they have rehabilitated the Ottoman Empire. So the founding moment is no longer 1923, it's 1453, the conquest of Constantinople by the Turks. So that suddenly is reenacted everywhere. You have museums, movies, public rituals that are replacing now the Kemalist rituals. And the idea there is that if your notion of Turkishness is the Ottoman Empire, then it doesn't really matter if you're a Kurd or an Armenian or anything, because all of these were part of the empire. You used to be this huge international power. You could be that again. You used to have, a diversity of people. There's no reason why you can't talk about the Armenian genocide, which now people are talking about in Turkey. Not saying that word very loudly, but, people are using it. This was not possible 15 years ago. So the AKP broke a lot of taboos. The Kurdish issue, the PKK you couldn't talk about the PKK. You had to call them terrorists officially in the news. Even if you were Kurdish, if you were in a public bus somewhere and you started speaking Kurdish on your cell phone, people might try to lynch you. I mean, this was a very dangerous situation. There was a lot of, resistance, a lot of nationalist enmity toward the Kurds, and suddenly we're in the middle of a peace deal with the PKK. So these are things that I think were made possible by this completely different understanding of what it means to be Turkish. So there are negative aspects of AKP rule, which I don't want to overlook. First of all, the sheer rapaciousness of the party, that the sale of public lands for private development, forget about protecting archaeological sites, environmental sites, historical sites, just sell, make buildings on it. And it's public land for private profit. And the private profit's very corrupt. I mean, the private profit goes into the coffers of the party. But the one of the interesting things is that the public corruption, the corruption in the big public construction projects and the public works projects, some of that gets reinvested in those projects. So the public sees, you know, oh, look at this, we have a subway. Look at this, we have great roads. People are always pointing, look at the roads, you know. So all kinds of things have happened that are good and that people point to. Youth unemployment is very, very high. Unemployment, in all the time the AKP has been in power, has never really budged very far from 10%, which is high. The official youth unemployment rate is now around 20%. Unofficially, it's much higher. Young people find their career paths blocked if they're not in the right networks, the Hizmet networks or the AKP networks. And then, you know, so women's labor force participation is 29%. It's also not very high. And in 2013, this is interesting, Gallup, there was a Gallup poll that found that half of Turkish families with children struggle to afford food. That's last year, or 2 years ago now. You know, so if it's such an economic miracle, what is going on here? I mean, I think a lot of what is going on is that it's an illusion that we too can now become upwardly mobile because people like us have become upwardly mobile. There's also an influx of cheap Chinese goods that makes it look like you're upwardly mobile because you could buy all this stuff that was never available before. Anyway, so the network issue is important. Both the AKP and Hizmet are organized as vast networks that pump profit into themselves through their various activities. And they used to work in tandem. Hizmet doing more educational stuff and business, and AKP doing politics and business. But they came into conflict partly because they both penetrated into the public sector, where they came into contradiction with each other and conflict, competition, I'm sorry. And also, they came into conflict when the peace deal with the Kurds started, because the Hizmet movement is very nationalist and is against any peace deal with the PKK. So I won't go into, we can talk about the details of that later, but that was the beginning of a split. And after that, it very rapidly turned into total war, where police thought to be associated with the Hizmet movement actually tried to arrest members of Prime Minister Erdogan's close circle for corruption. And that at that moment, that led to a turning point, okay? So in 2011, in that period, these sorts of things started to happen. And in response to this attack by what Erdogan perceived to be the Hizmet movement, what he calls the parallel state, he's struck back in a number of ways, but he struck back by, one, firing thousands of policemen or moving them from their posts, moving hundreds of judges from their posts, thereby quashing the whole corruption thing. And then he started changing the institutions. This has never happened before. During Kemalist times, Kemalists stocked, you know, they stocked the institutions. But the institutions were not transformed in this way. So what has happened as a result of all this is that under Tayyip Erdogan, now we're talking about a one-man show, primarily. You know, more and more it's Tayyip Erdogan deciding these things. So he has decided to and gone ahead and changed the whole balance of power as a result of the attack, the perceived attack by the parallel state. And that is, he has taken the judiciary and made it beholden to the government. He has taken many, many other institutions that had been previously independent and made them beholden to the government. And so there's no more balance of power. This is a very, very dangerous point that we have come to. And in that same period, he also started using the same rhetoric that they had used in Kemalist times. And that is because those levers of power remain in place after, you know, generations of schooling in fear-mongering, inside enemies, outside enemies, this aggressive paternalism, sowing suspicion, creating social polarization, you know, playing on people's fear of chaos. All of that was already in place. All you had to do is pull the lever, and he pulled the lever. And he's using, it's almost like he's become a Kemalist, and it's like you're living through Groundhog Day. You know, the same rhetoric, the same language, the same effect. But in here, I'll stop. The one thing that is, there are several wild cards. Okay, one of the main wild cards is the younger generation that I mentioned before, that grew up under this system. The younger generation is... has aspirations, has a global perspective, and we're talking about both pious and secular youth. They are concerned with social justice. They want choice, not just in, you know, their products, but they want choice in how they're going to live their lives. And what they're faced with is a government that is not on the same page with them, right? The government is just clamping down on choice, clamping down on their ability to be upwardly mobile, clamping down on their ability to be global. And so the government is really out of touch with a good, you know, half of the population that is still too young or too female to have any effect. Being young and being a woman means you have no way to affect politics. There are women in parliament. They have almost no say. So the only way for women and young people to be heard is to be out on the street, right? And then the question is anyone listening? So it's going to be another 10 to 15 years, if that, before these people, this new generation, which is so out of step with the old men who are running the show, before they have any way to change the system. So at the moment, we're at a total tipping point. We don't know which way this is going to go. We don't know if we're heading toward complete one-man rule. There's now even a split within the AKP where Erdogan is second-guessing the government, saying, you shouldn't do that. And the government, the deputy prime minister just said, I couldn't believe my ears, said, well, President Erdogan, he's now president, should really stay out of things. You know, we do have an elected government in Turkey. You know, and so there's this fight now within the AKP. So this is not secularism versus Islamism. This is Sunni versus Sunni. This is AKP versus AKP. This is pious and secular nationalists versus the Kurds. I mean, so it's much more complex. We don't know if the party's going to split, if you will have one-man rule from now on, if there will be street violence, which some people worry about, or if the military, which has been through AKP reforms made subservient to the civilian government, whether it will remain subservient, nobody knows. So that I'm leaving it with that.
Thank
I
you.
Don't know.